You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today is a jam-packed day for our last episode of 2020, if you can believe that. What a year it's been, 2021. Certainly cannot be worse. I should cross my fingers as I say that, but from Pacers' perspective, it's a busy day for many reasons. One is I wanted to cover early returns on Nate Bjorkgren because there's been a lot of questions about him for players and to other coaches and all that. So good time for me to talk about him because I've heard from a lot of players and I want to go through the stats about him. And Donnie Walsh, a longtime Pacers executive in the early formative years of the franchise, was an icon, retired today. So I'm going to talk about that. And then there's a game tonight. Donnie retired yesterday. And there's a game tonight, Pacers-Cavs. So I'm going to preview that action as well. It's going to be an interesting one. Let's start with Donnie Walsh, though, because that was the big news of the day. Right early in the day, Scott Agnes of Fieldhouse Files got that out first with that information before the Pacers officially announced it and came out with a statement. So Walsh has been with the Pacers for so long. 1984, I believe he joined the team. I think if I've been reading about all this stuff this morning, these dates, so I might get something wrong, but I think I got it right. But I believe every year except for the very first year that Herb Simon has owned the Pacers, Donnie Walsh has been with the team, minus that brief stint he had with the Knicks in the early 2010s. So 1983, Herb Simon buys the team. 1984, Walsh gets hired as an assistant coach. And then 1986, Walsh is GM. He's in the front office, right? He drafts Reggie. He drafts Smits. He grows that team to, you know, the four-time conference finalists, gets to the finals, right? Obviously, huge impact on the Pacers and their growth. Came back as a consultant even after leaving for the Knicks for a little bit. So just one of the most iconic people in the history of the Pacers. You cannot tell the history of the Pacers without talking about Donnie Walsh. So an incredible run and really happy for him. Glad he can retire on his own terms and made it into this season even. As the front office changed around him, I'm sure that was interesting. Larry Bird sounds like he's going to stay, but Herb Simon issued the following statements. He said, "Over my 30-year relationship with Donnie, I have been amazed to watch him help lead this organization to what it has become. He was certainly the right leader at the right time, and the invaluable wisdom and counsel he's provided over the decades extends well beyond the lines of the basketball court." So pretty crazy that this happened. Scott actually asked Miles Turner in today's media session about, you know, if he could provide a statement on what Donnie Walsh has meant to him and the Pacers, because Miles has been, he's the longest tenured Pacer by a few years, right? He's been around since 2015 even. So here's what Miles Turner had to say about Donnie Walsh retiring and stepping down from the Pacers.
Hey, Miles, on a totally different note, you've been around since 2015, and today Donnie Walsh announced that he's stepping down. Do you have any great memories from your time with him, or what do you remember about him kind of always being courtside watching?
Oh, yeah, that's news to me. Well, first of all, you know, Donnie, the first time I ever talked to him was my draft workout when I came here, and he just, I think that he was just really high on me, high on my potential. And, you know, we had great discussions amongst that. He just wished me the best of luck. And then, you know, I happened to end up here in Indy. And the fact that, you know, my first 3 years, he was at every single practice, always talking, always positive, always evaluating. I think just being able to pick his brain about certain things was fun for me as a young player, and really beneficial. You know, Donnie's been nothing but great to me. So, and great to this organization, the success he's had over the years here, you know, over the past really several years here, you know, it's been incredible. You know, I was able to bring a small market team into contention every year, and a lot of regular season success. And that's something that just doesn't happen at a snap of a finger. So something he had to orchestrate, something he had to put together. So I have nothing but the fondest memories with Donnie, and I wish him the best of luck in, you know, his future endeavors.
So great words there from Miles. Perfect guy to hear from today in terms of the player set. You know, everybody else has not been here as long as him, and Bjorkgren's brand new. So, but incredible for Donnie to have the career he had, to take the Pacers from, you know, they were basically nothing in the NBA when he got here. In the early 80s, they had not achieved much since the merger. He led them to their first playoff appearance, their playoff first series win, you know, their first conference finals appearance and win. and actual and only finals appearance at the helm of the team. So just a fantastic run with the team, even through his consultant years just now. He used to sit courtside all the time. Simon Moore's statement said, "I owe him an incredible debt of gratitude. While he may be stepping away, Donnie will always be a part of the Pacers family, and I am personally excited for him as he transitions to his next chapter." So I have no idea if anything is next for Donnie Walsh, as Herb indicated there. Maybe he's just finally retiring and getting out of basketball after a crazy long career. He's, again, started in 1984, right? That's longer than my whole life. So good for Donnie Walsh. Happy for him, and hope he can transition into a happy and fulfilling retirement. And for the Pacers, you know, we'll see if they make any hires or add to the front office to replace him. But, you know, it could potentially be a big loss. He's got a lot of experience. He's seen it all, right? Like you don't even talk about the days where, you know, before Twitter, where Reggie Miller was potentially threatening, demanding a trade because he wanted more money. Stuff like that. I don't remember the exact details of Reggie Miller wanting more money. I just remember there was some crazy story about that, right? Like, Donnie Walsh has been through all that. He's talked through all those situations before. Nothing is new to him, and him being a consultant was big for the team. We'll see how much it impacts their front office going forward. But congratulations to him, first and foremost, because retirement's awesome, especially in old age. And in 2020, we need to celebrate some things. So good for Donnie. Let's move on and talk about something the opposite of old and illustrious with the Pacers. Something new and could be illustrious. Nate Bjorkgren. I want to assess his first, let's say, week. I know that's probably too early for an assessment of a coach, but I'll explain why in a second. But before we talk about Bjorkgren, I have to talk to you guys about the great people over at betonline.ag, because they are my favorite place to do online sports betting. If you're ready for football, you know, there's some huge, huge games coming up this weekend for playoff positioning in the NFL. College football bowl season currently ongoing. I believe there's a game right now. Florida Gators, I think, are playing. Obviously, the NBA is up and running. College basketball. You can get all that on betonline.ag. They have player props, games, you name it, you do it. It's the only place that has you covered and the one place that we trust here at the Locked On Podcast Network, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account and use the promo code LOCKEDON. When you do so, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. Again, they have NFL games of the week. They have the top college football games. They have all the current headlines in sports. Don't sit on the sidelines. Get in on the action. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit, all one word, locked on. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. So let's talk Bjorkgren, because I think some Bjorkgren stories are coming via various outlets, actually, because a lot of the Pacers media contingent conglomerate, I don't know what you want to call us, have been asking players on the Pacers and even opposing head coaches about, you know, what do you think of Nate Bjorkgren so far? What has he done to lead you guys to success? What's he like at halftime? All that, right? That's usually an indicator that a profile is coming out. And for me, it's been so interesting and refreshing to hear. And maybe some of this is just like it's new and it's you know, whatever the period's called, infatuation. But the players are giving just glowing reviews of Bjorkgren at every turn, right? Brogdon, after the first Celtics game, which the Pacers won, called him a genius, right? Like just a straight-up genius. Turner today and his media was talking about how good he is at both X's and O's and being the people manager. And he's just creative, right? Like what we heard from, I think it was Bjorkgren who's admitted himself, they ran a box and one against the Celtics. They barely even practiced that. He said, "I just trust that my team is smart and full of smart players that communicate, and I can just say, do this and they'll do it." And that kind of creativity and trust, it's just, it's very different for the Pacers, and I think that could be part of why it's so alluring and infatuating for players at this point. But they all seem to genuinely really enjoy him as a person, as a basketball mind and communicator, really trusts them to do what they're supposed to do, and at the same time hypes them up to their skill sets, you know, stuff like that. And it's just been very illuminating for me to hear all these thoughts from players, because, you know, there were some high praises of McMillan from point guards mostly, I think. That was like, it's awesome to learn from a former player. And, you know, we often have like telepathy with point guard stuff. But like, you know, there were some complaints as well behind the scenes. So this is different so far. Again, it's been four games of one era. This is way too early. I'm going to call this a way too early assessment of Bjorkgren. But he really is doing a fantastic job so far. As coach of the Pacers, he'll have another test with the Cavs tonight, a team that beat him in the preseason. We'll see what kind of adjustments he can make. We'll talk Cavs later on. But just looking through the stats, it's been pretty interesting to see how he adjusts from game to game, right? Because if you look, the Pacers are first in the league in field goal percentage. They are making the highest percentage of their just the raw shots of any team in the league. And this, that is in spite of the fact that they are 28th right now. As I'm recording at 8:45 p.m. on the 30th, right? So there are games happening right now. These rankings could change. But anyway, the 28th in three-point percentage at 30.3% right now. And they're still first in field goal percentage. That is because they're taking a ton of shots at the rim. He is brilliant at drawing up these plays and these cuts that get guys going toward the basket. And either the threat of that or even the shot itself is often leading to efficient scoring, good shots, and he's getting the right guys those shots, right? McConnell's not taking that 3-foot jump shot fadeaway thing as much anymore, whereas you do have McDermott going hard to the rim because teams are really over-leveraging his three, and Sabonis is taking a ton of shots to the rim, and Turner's dunking in transition, and Brogdon's getting by guys to the rim. Depot's spinning through the lane. He's got the right guys doing the right stuff. He's not just throwing stuff at the rim and hoping it works, and that's why the most shots are going in, even though the threes aren't falling. Now, here's an interesting stat because I see a lot of people really happy with Bjorkgren fan-wise, and they should be. He's fantastic. Pacers are 25th right now in the league in three-point attempts per game. They're under 30 again, which is crazy because in the preseason, they were just chuck, 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 40-something a game. And because they've been so good at getting to the rim, and some of that is they've played the Knicks and the Bulls and the Celtics twice, and the Celtics slowed them down a bit in that last game, but in the first one, they did not. But they haven't really been slowed down to the rim. They haven't had to shoot threes as much. They're 25th in attempts. So they might be last in the league in made threes. I don't know. Because their percentage is so low. So he's kind of adapted his shot profile from preseason to now, which I think is interesting because usually one of the only things you can take from preseason is stylistic stuff. So maybe he's not actually as three-point loving as we thought. I think he'll get up closer to 35 when it's all said and done this year, but to see him right now be able to find a way to get this team to win at less than 33s a game, including the fact that they've been missing all of them, is fascinating. And they've been good looks. He's drawing up the right plays to get the guy shots from the right spot. Miles Turner and Aaron Holiday talked about that today in their media availability. So it's only a matter of time before those fall, right? In a normal season, right, 1/10 of your games, let's say. This seems about right anyway. So it's like 6 to 8 games, 7 to 8 games, you'll just stink. You'll miss a bunch of threes, right? I think they played the Heat 2 years ago, and they made like no threes through the first three quarters of the game, and they lost. And then you'll have another 7 or 8 games where you can't miss. And, you know, the Bucks just set the three-point made record 2 nights ago in the league, right? It just happens. The Pacers have currently had, I think, 2 slightly below-average games, which happens, and then 1 awful game from three. And it looks awful, but they're due for one of those can't-miss nights. Boom, they'll easily win that game. Free throws, a bane of the Pacers' existence last year. They were one of like the lowest free throw attempts per game teams ever. They're only at 20 right now, which is kind of fascinating with as much as they're getting to the rim. But they do have a lot of contact-averse guys. So that's something that I think Bjorkgren could probably improve a little bit at is maybe foul-drawing scenarios, but it's kind of the roster he's given. And then the big one, and something he's really happy about, is their assists. They're 4th in the league in assists, right? So, yes, they're making the most shots, well, percentage-wise. I think in actual field goals made, they're not quite first. Yeah, they're not first. But they're 4th in assists, right? So he really likes, you know, move the ball around, cutting on all that stuff. So I think he is good at drawing up plays that set up his guys to be in a great position to score the ball. And he's done a great job with it all year. And, the players have glowing reviews of the guy. So the earliest possible time I could assess a coach, this is way too early. The season started like 10 days ago, not even. But the earliest assessment of Bjorkgren, and he is passing with flying colors. Now, we'll get another fun test from him, right? The first game that he didn't have one of his players due to injury was Oladipo missing. Well, I guess Lamb's been out the whole year, but that's the same as last year. Oladipo missing that Celtics game. He just went 8 guys. He didn't really have to change much. Against the Cavs tomorrow, and I'll get to that game in a second, he will not have TJ Warren. I don't know that he'll just throw Aaron Holiday in as a starter like he did when Depot was out. I think McDermott is an option. McDermott's played very well under Bjorkgren. I think Justin Holiday is an option because he's really good at the three. And then I asked Bjorkgren in media availability about Cassius Stanley today, and he said, it could be a matter of time before he starts putting him in games. I'm not sure he'll do that against the Cavs, and I'm not going to throw that audio in here out of the fear of, you know, him just doing coach speak, which he has not done yet. To be fair, he has followed through on most of the things he has said, but he did say that. And so we'll see. Maybe Cassius sneaks into the bench rotation this game. But if he goes with eight guys again, I'll be pretty surprised. If Sumner is healthy, I bet Sumner could get some minutes in this game. But yeah, I want to see how he manages injuries and stuff like that. And you know, he's had one good game of late game execution and one bad game. So I'm just really looking forward to watching him develop. But the earliest possible assessment of the new head coach for the Pacers, he's doing a great job so far. So yeah, like I just said, Warren's out against the Cavs, and I think that's a good time to transition to talking about tonight's game against the Cavs. Let's take a short little break and then do that. Okay, the Cavs. Do we take anything from the preseason games before we decide, before we say if they could matter in this game? Well, I'm not going to, because that would be stupid. But the first preseason, here's what I will say. In the first preseason game, the first three quarters, Bjorkren actually played like the good players on the Pacers. And they were up eight after three quarters. And then he put in the bench and they lost the first game, whatever. They were by eight, right? And that was the full strength, or mostly full strength Pacers. I don't think they had Warren, versus the mostly full strength Cavs. Then the second game, they were up, if I could do math, they were up two after three quarters. And then they lost it again in the fourth. So they have been better than the Cavs with the main rotation in the preseason. However, it's a preseason. It means nothing. I'm just saying I'm not going to take anything from those losses and be like, well, maybe the Cavs have figured something out. However, the Cavs are 3-1, and the Bucks have two losses, even though they might beat the Heat again tonight and improve to 3-2. But the Bucks have two losses. The Pistons stink. So the winner of this game, first place in the Central Division. First time all season we'll have sole possession of first place. And in a short season, tiebreaker stuff matters just ever so much more. I don't think the Cavs are actually going to be in first place in the division when it's all said and done this year. But you never know. Every game's important. Anyway, so the Cavs are 3-1. They're sneakily okay this year. They are fifth in opponent points per game and 16th in points scored. I like rating stats better. They're 18th in offense and second in defense per their per possession numbers. That is an insanely good defensive figure for the Cavs, and I do not think that sustains. They just lost to the Knicks, only scoring 86 points. So their offense has kind of stagnated. And the big thing in this game, I just mentioned Warren being out. We'll see how that shakes out, what the rotation shakes out to be. But on the Cavs side, Dellavedova is out, Kevin Love is out, Isaac Okoro is out, and Dylan Windler is out. Kevin Porter Jr. is also out. But the first four guys, I said, played in the preseason and did some okay stuff against the Pacers. Okoro hit the game winner. Kevin Love's a former All-Star. Windler hit some threes. None of them are playing. So their rotation is really weakened, right? Their starters are still going to be an okay mix of guys, but they're just a shallow Cavs team. They can't do it on both ends. Like, their defense cannot keep up at this pace if their offense is going to be what the Cavs want it to be. So Sexton's been amazing this year. Through four games, he's averaging 25.5 points and 4 assists per game. Ridiculous efficiency, 53% from the field, 54% from deep. So he's just a stud. And there's a point where, like, he's so good on offense, but he's so bad on defense. You know, how do you balance that out? But they have Garland playing really well, too. He's at 18.5 points per game and 8 assists. So their backcourt is lethal, right? Might even play up to the level of Brogdon and Depot in this game. If they do, you're going to have to win elsewhere. And without Warren, you know, Warren's usually easy for these kind of matchups. Like, Larry Nance is probably going to start at the 3. That's Warren can destroy that. Maybe Chetty Osmond starts. But normally that would be an advantage. Now they'll have to probably go McDermott or Justin Holiday or Aaron Holiday. That advantage is neutralized. Andre Drummond's going to kick someone's ass like he always does against the Pacers. I'm sure they'll try to put Sabonis on him so he doesn't kick Turner's ass. But Drummond's a beast. He'll get 15 rebounds no matter who's guarding him. Whatever. And then Nance is pretty good, like I said. So they're still going to have a good 5 on the floor to start it. Maybe the Pacers don't look awesome against that. However, with all their injuries, if you take out every guy just named plus injured guys, their bench is going to be like JaVale McGee, Dante Exum, Damian Dotson. I don't even know who else. So that is where the Pacers can take off, because the Sabonis plus bench groups and even the Turner plus bench groups this year, which is a little different than in the past. They've had Miles playing with the second unit more often and Sabonis with the starters. Those groups can kick some ass in those minutes, right? Like, they don't have quite the same creation level with that guys, with those guys in there. They don't, without Sexton, they don't have the score that makes you go, oh, you know, oh shit. They just have to play solid pick and roll defense against whatever big is out there and keep it up, because I think that The Cavs are actually better than people thought this year, to their credit. And, you know, they're 3-1 for a reason. Their schedule was terrible before they lost to the Knicks. But they did it. They won the games. So maybe they're a little better than people thought. But I think that the Cavs, if they want to be good on D and get Garland and Sexton to buy in and really exert the energy required for them to be a top 15, you know, a top half defense this year, their offense will suffer in a way that we've seen already. They're 18th in offense, despite having Sexton going crazy and Love playing okay when he played and Drummond having absurd numbers, right? So if they want to get better on D, they can't score enough to keep up with good teams. And if they just let Sexton be awesome on offense, they're going to have no point of attack defense. So I think that there will be holes somewhere for the Pacers to take advantage, whether it's, you know, when Drummond's out, they can allow slow-footed bigs to take advantage of, or when Sexton's not engaged on D, they can get some drives going. Maybe this is the game the Pacers get up a ton of threes just because of the Cavs personnel. So I think there are ways they can take advantage. They just have to not get totally – the Pacers just have to hunker down on D, right? They can't have a stretch. And I've appreciated Caitlin Cooper of Indie Corners continuing to talk about this on Twitter throughout the season, is that the defense the Pacers run is exhausting, right? So there will be times where if you just have a group that's beat up out there, you can hemorrhage points. That's what happened in the fourth quarter against the Celtics. So Pacers, if they can maintain their D for long enough in this game, I think they can win pretty easily. I still don't think the Cavs are as good as their record or their ratings suggest they can be. But given, you know, Sexton's been really variably good, they have two good guards and Drummond playing well, there's still a chance that the variability of the Cavs leads them over the Pacers. The Cavs beat the Pacers last year with a worse roster than they have now. So could be a tough game. But I think that if Brogdon and Oladipo continue to play how they have, the Pacers have just a good enough backcourt to win this game and good enough frontcourt with Turner and Sabonis, honestly. Turner's been so ridiculously good on defense this year, and Sabonis has been so ridiculously good on offense outside of that second Celtics game, that just at all times the Pacers have an advantage somewhere so far this year, right? They haven't played a team that is just completely, like, there's no way for the Pacers to do anything. They're just neutralized. Just had a few times against, like, Philly last year, Milwaukee, stuff like that. So I think they can beat the Cavs in this game. I think they can close out 2020 on a high note, start 4-1, one of their best starts in a while, and I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope you guys are too. And we will break it all down next week because we're going to take New Year's off here on Locked On Pacers. We take the big eight holidays off, basically. So we will see you guys next Monday. We'll break down what happened in the Cavs, and I believe they play the Knicks this weekend. So the Knicks games, potentially talking about a 5-1 Pacers team come Monday, given their opponents. Hopefully no one gets hurt over that time. If so, you know, if anything big happens, we'll cover that as well. But thank you guys so much for listening. I hope everybody enjoys their weekend and stays safe and has a nice New Year's. And we will see you Monday to continue to talk about the Indiana Pacers.